On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, Venezuela 3, USA 2. What a final it was. Gino Suarez, the hero in the ninth inning. We take you through every angle of that phenomenal title game. We were in the building. My ears are still ringing. And maybe, you know what? Maybe this whole pod will just be Jordan and I going, "Hey, Venezuela, woo!" Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world, ready to fly around to all of yesterday's spring training action. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Nick Lodolo going 4 2/3 innings for the Reds against the Guardians in Goodyear.
I am fired up to catch up on the Cactus League. No. That is not what this episode of Baseball Barbacast is going to be. It is our WBC finale. Venezuela, World Baseball Classic champions at long last. No, this tournament's history is not particularly lengthy. However, this was a triumph. Years, decades, generations, lifetimes of devotion to this sport in the making. And that, of course, is our opener.
Venezuela 3, United States of America 2. That is the final score. But as you said, it is about a whole lot more than that. Entering this tournament, Venezuela was far and away the most successful and most decorated baseballing nation to have never won a World Baseball Classic. In fact, it had never even reached a final. Venezuela currently claims the third most big leaguers in the sport behind the United States and the Dominican Republic. And yet it has faltered and underwhelmed on the international stage. Thankfully, that is no longer the case.
Yeah, and I think as much talent was on this roster coming in, and that was certainly more so on the position player side that we were focused on, the pitching, of course, becoming even more of a main character. We, because of that history, were stuck saying this team has the fourth best chance. You look at literally any power ranking in this tournament, and you would maybe see like a shuffling between Japan and DR and USA with arguments for those three. But because those three nations had won this tournament before, and because those three rosters were also stacked, Venezuela was always like, okay, well, they're fourth, but they're probably not in the top three. And yet here they are, finally on top, and certainly will not be underestimated ever again. All right, Jake, we have plenty to talk about, but let's get into this recap and talk about how USA ended up for the second straight World Baseball Classic on the wrong side of a 3-2 championship game with oh my goodness. All right, let's begin with first inning. Our starting pitching matchup, Nolan McLain and Eduardo Rodriguez.
Hold up, Jordan. We need to talk about the introduction because MLB or big WBC or whoever is making the decision to do intros the way they did it last night, where instead of players emerging from the dugout to a burst of fire to jog onto the field and go down the line and high five their teammates, as we've seen so many times before, they entered from the foul poles, Aaron Judge and Luis Arraez holding their nation's flags and the entire team trailing behind them. I believe they did something similar in 2023. They leaned into it even more with the lighting and the music this time around. And what I appreciate about it, and what I appreciate about the way that MLB kind of brands and crafts and frames this tournament, is that they understand this is theater, that this is anime, right? That this is entertainment. And to start the game with such a wonderfully kind of campy intro set a lovely tone, and I am very appreciative of that.
It was cool. It was cinematic. It was different. It did feel like its own unique presentation. And again, this was our first World Baseball Classic, right? So some of the bells and whistles around it. And by the way, this will become even more relevant when we discuss the scenes after the game involving the medal ceremony. But the introductions and all the pomp and circumstance beforehand was also quite cool. Because, yeah, you know, even in the semifinal games, we had more of just the regular postseason feel. Oh, here's the starting lineup. And you're just used to, okay, woo, we cheer this guy, we cheer this guy. But this slow walk from the corners, from the foul poles in all the way to home plate was really cool. It felt like an important international sporting competition, which is, of course, the point. Mm. And I think that they succeeded in that venture in terms of presentation. But let's get to the baseball. 8:21 p.m. Eastern time, we get our first pitch from Nolan McLain, USA, the home team, Venezuela, the road team. Because of a coin flip, we should point out, these teams both arrived in the championship game 5-1 earlier on Monday. I believe it was determined that if Venezuela were to advance, because Italy would have been undefeated, they would have been the home team had they beaten Venezuela. But because they had the same record, USA won a coin flip, and they did get to be the home team. We will talk about the crowd as this goes on, but it did mean that Venezuela would bat first, and that meant that Ronald Acuna Jr. would bat first, and that meant, to no surprise, that Ronald Acuna Jr. would come out swinging, and Nolan McLain gives him something to swing at, 98 at the bottom of the zone, and what does Ronald do? He ropes one back up the middle, and we are off.
This kind of mattered in my mind, where it was like, Ronald is fearless, right? He is not intimidated by the size of the moment. And for him to come out on the first pitch of the game, and it wasn't like, he got a little bit of that, a little blooper. It was like Nolan McLain going, here's my gas. And Ronald being like, that's very cool for you. I'm going to scorch it up the middle. It was very loud. Very loud way to start the game. McLain as the character here is very interesting. This pitching matchup was fascinating. Nolan McLain, 8 career starts, very much on the up. Eduardo Rodriguez, more than 8 career starts, very much on the downward slope of what has been an impressive career, but certainly not someone that you would feel wonderful about starting a playoff game in the year 2026. And yet he met the moment. McLain gets out of that first inning after Acuna reaches with a ground ball double play, getting out of the inning on only, I believe, 5 pitches. But McLain's stuff, the visual of McLain's stuff was just freako.
Yeah, and that was the thing. And I think we talked about McLain coming into it and, you know, consensus top pitching prospect in baseball, what he did at the end of the season last year, what the stuff looks like. But this was a different level. I mean, his fastball velocity was up 3 ticks. Fastball over the first couple innings, averaging 98.3 miles per hour when he maxed out at 98.4 last season in the major leagues. He was up to 99.2. The breaking balls were moving like crazy. Eventually a little bit too crazy, as we're going to get to here in a second. But man, oh man, was McLain just gassing him up. So yeah, he gets through the first inning on 5 pitches. And then Eduardo Rodriguez, he's not out there, you know, blowing smoke. But for whatever reason, this USA lineup was not exactly doing much with it. That begins with Aaron Judge looking at a cutter in the bottom of the first for a strike 3. That was a 1-2-3 inning. Again, McLain goes back out, posts a scoreless second. His stuff is just ridiculous. He's throwing multiple fastballs, the sweeper, just the horizontal movement. And we saw this with Severino also. When guys with breaking balls, like when the velocity is up, it's not just about, oh, their fastball's faster.
Yeah.
It's like the movement on the breaking balls is just more visceral. That was definitely true for Severino. And McLain, it's always true, even when it's more 85, 86. But when that sweeper is 88, 89, I mean, my God. I mean, it's like a shocking thing to watch the ball move like that. So they're both of these guys are just kind of chilling in the first few innings.
There was a curvy through to Gleyber Torres that was Bugs Bunny-ish. It just was like it looked cartoony. It was absolutely remarkable.
We go to the third inning, though, and Salvador Perez dumps one in, or I believe he kind of like squirts one right past Bryce Harper, I believe, down the line. Churio strikes out. Acuna walks. So we have first and second with one out here. And McLain uncorks one of those sharp breaking balls. I believe this was a traditional curveball and not a sweeper, but he completely yanks it. It's in the right-handed batter's box or left-handed batter's box, and this is a straight wild pitch. Maybe Will Smith could have blocked it, this was not on him at all. I mean, he straight yanked it, and that's important because it moves Salvador Perez and Ronald Acuna Jr. to second and third. Michael Garcia immediately capitalizes on that with a sacrifice fly. They only get one that inning as Arraez grounds out, but Venezuela has an early lead.
Bottom of the fourth. Very interesting moment to me, where it's very difficult to assess in a low-scoring game. Did the pitcher do good or did the offense do bad, right? Because that's the same thing. And to whom do we give the credit? When a pitcher is out there looking like Nolan McLain, I think it is easier to be like, man, that offense had no chance. When a pitcher is out there looking like Eduardo Rodriguez, throwing 92, is spotting up, using a changeup, I think it's kind of a different story. Like, we're more likely to just blame the hitters for not doing a good job. But there's a moment here in the bottom of the fourth where USA gets a runner on with two outs and Alex Bregman comes up to the dish. Bregman only in this lineup just because of his career numbers against Eduardo Rodriguez are ridiculously good. It's a good matchup for him. So he started over Gunnar Henderson and he gets a middle sinker right down Broadway in a 2-2 count. Just misses it, bounces it to short for a fielder's choice to end the inning. And for me, that was the moment where I was officially worried for Team USA that they would not, like, that it wasn't a normal, that was not a pitch that Bregman usually misses when he's going right. And it was an example of a whole team's lineup, the tension of who will break the tension grows the tension.
And, you know, jumping to the end here, Judge says afterwards, like, oh, were we tense? No, we just didn't execute. We had pitches to hit. Sometimes they were pounding them into the ground. Sometimes they were popping them up. Sometimes they were whiffing. Judge was just like watching some pitches. Certainly later on, his later at-bats, he just watched multiple pitches in the same at-bat where it was like, what are you waiting for, dude? That's the one you're supposed to hit out. And in this same fourth inning, I should mention, Judge strikes out on a changeup. Again, a really nicely located, executed pitch from Eduardo Rodriguez. But again, just zeroing in on Rodriguez here for a second because we're getting towards the end of his outing. He's a veteran pitcher. He's capable, just as Michael Lorenzen was against the same, all the same things we said about Michael Lorenzen, we can kind of apply here to Eduardo Rodriguez. And Eduardo Rodriguez is more accomplished, I would say, than at his peak than Michael Lorenzen, but it's the same kind of thing because the stuff doesn't blow you away, but it's enough of a mix. But as you said, at this point in his career, the season that he's coming off of, where, you know, among pitchers who threw 150 innings, he was one of the worst. All of his pitches rated out as below average over the duration of last season, including that changeup that I just mentioned that by run value was literally the worst changeup of any changeup that was like thrown a lot last season. And it got Judge, it got Buxton a little bit later. But yeah, I agree. Bregman in particular, and where we this lineup construction, which again, I don't really want to harp on too much because all of these players are amazing. And like Alex Bregman, I understand. Yeah, that's a pretty good matchup. So
should I start this multi-time
moments?
Should I start this multi-time All-Star or that one? You know, it's not All-Star or Joe Schmo. The other thing that's worth mentioning about Rodriguez is that he really wasn't supposed to even be in the spot, right? So the starting rotation that Omar Lopez, Venezuela manager, probably had sketched out on a piece of paper in January was Pablo Lopez, Ranger Suarez, and Jesus Luzardo. That would have been the three. Ranger ends up participating. Lizardo pulls out because he was an impending free agent before he signed an extension. And then Pablo Lopez blows out and gets elbow surgery. And so that kind of pushes Eduardo Rodriguez, who would have been on the roster, probably would have started the fourth game of pool play, but wouldn't have necessarily pitched in the knockout rounds. That pushes him kind of up the pecking order and into this moment. And boy, did he meet this moment. It was so impressive, dodging danger at every turn. And I really appreciated that Omar Lopez, Venezuela's manager, went out to get him before things spiraled out of control. We'll hop back to the Willier home run in a second, but Lopez doesn't let him face Will Smith for a second time. Comes out to get him with one out in the fifth and brings in Bizardo to finish the inning. And it's like, you'd rather go get him and keep the lovely memory of this evening alive for him than ride him for too long and have it go sour.
Yeah, 100%. And we'll close the book on E-Rod here. He said after the game, I won a World Series with the Red Sox, early in his career. But he was like, this is better. This is my best achievement. He, of course, a huge factor of why they won this game. And so, just happy for that guy. Because it's been a weird couple of years for him. Just across, when you just consider some of the stuff that's happened with his career, with his free agency, with the trade, the non-trade. Like, he's someone that has, he's got a lot of money. He's had a good career. But he's dealt with some stuff. And I think that was really cool to see him have that moment. And finish on E-Rod. And then I think it's also a good contrast to the end of McClain's outing as well.
Right. And Venezuela entering this game, had the fourth worst starter ERA in the tournament. Now, again, I know it's small sample size, only six games, but the only teams with worse starting pitching were Israel, Czechia, and Brazil. Okay? That's remarkable for a team that made it to the finals and really a testament to how good their bullpen had been.
Oh,
they have had to work from behind in multiple games. Against Italy, they had to work from behind. Against Japan, they had to work from behind. Obviously, they lost to DR in pool play. But for Rodriguez to come here and give them this type of outing, when he leaves the game with knowing the bullpen that they have, you do feel pretty good about where Venezuela is at. Let's rewind slightly and go back to the Willier Abreu home run and how that ends McClain's outing. Willier with a solo shot in the top of the fifth to dead center field. Sweet, sweet swing for the Red Sox outfielder to give Venezuela a 2-0 lead.
Yeah, this was a heck of a moment. Second pitch of the inning, McClain having already gone four. I mean, DeRosa admitted after the game, we did not expect him to go five innings. And that also didn't sound great because it's like, well, maybe he should have gone four because he gave up a leadoff home run in the top of the fifth. But whatever, we know that was not the biggest problem in this game. And of course, we'll talk about the overall USA offensive performance. But for Willier Abreu, another awesome moment, right? He has that huge home run against Japan, but his semifinal was terrible. And I mean, that if you look at, I don't know if they were tracking, WPA in these games, but he had first pitch out to end an inning, first pitch out to end an inning, strikeout, strikeout. That's what he did against Italy. And so for him to come back and have a home run in the final, obviously a guy that crushes righties and is clearly kind of emerging as a well above average outfielder in the league was great. And he's a heck of a hitter. So McClain does get a couple more outs. Brad Keller comes in again, as you mentioned, the next inning, Eduardo Bizardo comes in for Eduardo Rodriguez. It's a 1-2-3 inning. Bizardo strikes out Will Smith. Turan grounds out and we're flying now. We are not getting a lot of base runners on either side.
We can kind of not talk about Venezuela hitting until the ninth inning because the U.S. bullpen just comes in and simplifies stuff. But in the bottom of the sixth, we have an important moment where Bryce Harper has a two-out single. That brings Aaron Judge to the plate as the tying run. Jose Buto, Joey Butts, former Met, current Giant, on the mound, goes 2-0 on Judge. And Salvador yes. Perez like calls time and goes to the mound to talk to Jose Buto. And this is a thing I usually hate. I hate the mid at bat pitching conversation. I think that it is the equivalent of saying, hey, Jordan, don't think of an elephant. Right. Often the epitome of this was the Sir Anthony Dominguez versus Shohei Ohtani mound visit in game 3 of the World Series. Remember this? Where they're like, hey, base open. Don't let Ohtani homer. Okay. You did that. But Buto shows up for the moment on a 3-2 pitch, gets Judge to roll a middle slider to third base. If we're talking good pitching versus bad hitting, this was bad hitting.
That's the thing. Again, I love Buto. He had an awesome tournament, but that 2-0 pitch, he slider right down the middle. Gets another ball. Now it's 3-1. What are you looking for 3-1? How about 96-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle? Judge watches it. 3-2, he gets a slider, also right down the middle. Grounds out, ends the inning. We go to the 7th. In comes Will Vest for his tournament debut. At least he got the pitch.
Welcome.
Unlike, you know, Jeff Hoffman and Tim Hill, who Tim never Hill. Appeared, but still got silver medals. Congratulations to them. We go to the bottom of the 7th, and this is another important moment. And something that I think we will get to in terms of the bigger picture of how Venezuela toppled Team USA. And that is because Angel Zerpa comes in to pitch. Why is that important? Because Angel Zerpa pitched in almost every game of this tournament, including on Monday in the semifinal. And while Team USA decided that, oh, we're only going to use certain pitchers under certain conditions, Omar Lopez said, I don't care. I'm going to use my best pitchers. They are down there. They would like to pitch. They would like to win the World Baseball Classic. And so Angel Zerpa and Andres Machado and, of course, Daniel Palencia, all those guys, and Bizardo, who also pitched on Monday, you're coming in. That's what's going to happen because you're our best options. Now, as we know, it was not a perfect run to the finish line here, and we're going to get to this the big moment until it wasn't. But this is where you start to realize after Will Vest comes in, having showed up 2 days ago, here comes Zerpa for his 6th appearance in 7 games of the tournament. And he also delivers and then this is another like, it's not even a rally. They basically would just get like one base runner and then the inning would end. In this case, it was Roman Anthony walk. Machado comes in and gets Will Smith to pop out. As far as managerial decisions, I would say this was another big one. When Machado comes in to face Will Smith, DeRosa still has yet to use his bench. He has Gunnar Henderson is a player that was on the bench. He has a catcher who hit 60 home runs who is on the bench.
Yeah.
He has a few other good players that are on the bench. And he said, nope, Will Smith, that's my guy. He's having a great tournament. Boom. Okay. Will Smith pops out. We go to the 8th. Griffin Jacks 1-2-3. Again, the Venezuela at bats are pretty bad for like most of this game. And I will also point out that this tournament, like their offensive stat line, we're going to crush the Team USA offense here in a little bit, but the Venezuelan offensive output was almost identical. Like there, you look at their slash lines, they're very similar. It's actually a little bit less. But you could say that's disappointing because there's some great hitters in this lineup, not as great as the Team USA hitters, but you could still say, I imagine that if Venezuela loses this game 3-2, there are probably some Venezuelan fans feeling like, wow, our offense also kind of let us down, right? But ultimately, their pitching was as good as it was, at least until one moment. We go to the 8th inning. Machado back out. Remember, he had come into the 7th, so this was a little up-down for the Oryx Buffaloes relief ace. And what happens, Jake Mintz, in the bottom of the 8th inning?
With 2 outs, 4-pitch walk to Bobby Witt. That brings up Bryce Harper.
With 4-pitch walk count. To Bobby Witt with 2 outs.
Yeah, that 4-pitch walk to Bobby Witt with 2 outs is like, and that's straight to jail. Harper gets a 1-0 changeup in the middle of the plate and just does not miss it. It was a terrible pitch. Harper clobbers it to dead center field, knows it's gone immediately. And I will say, for all the criticism that Team USA fans have deserved in some ways for the noise that has not met the opponents, it was loud in there when Bryce Harper hit the two-run homer to tie the game in the eighth inning of the WBC final. This was super freaking cool for Bryce. Yes, as he had some odd comments about how he cares more about the Olympics. Yeah, but Bryce is here and Bryce is playing and Bryce is invested. Bryce understands that this is theater. He gets this tournament, that it is a vehicle to promote the sport. He understands that, and he just had ice in his veins here, dude. What a swing. What a moment for him. It ends up not mattering, but you certainly can't wake up this morning and be like, Bryce Harper lost Team USA this tournament. Where I think if I had said, hey, USA lost the final this morning, you would have been like, well, Bryce Harper hitting in the two hole the whole time certainly did not help this offense because he was bad. He had the single earlier on, and he had the biggest swing of the night for the Americans.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, because there was so little other effort from the offense. But, you know, he's walking to that plate 5-for-27 in the tournament. I mean, it had been really rough. But instead, the shortcomings, the focus, the spotlight, the where were you when Team USA needed you to hit the baseball with your bat, that ended up being more of a story of Aaron Judge, who, after Bryce Harper hits the game-tying home run, strikes out for the third time, ending his night with a 0-for-4 with three strikeouts as he strikes out against Andrés Machado, sending us to the ninth inning. And here comes Garrett Whitlock.
Oh, captain?
Oh,
my captain.
Not awesome. Oh, not captain. Awesome from Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge, he homers in his first WBC at bat against Brazil. He has a home run, I believe it was against Mexico. And it was like, oh man, here we go. After that, not a whole lot. Not a whole lot from Aaron Judge. And that's okay. He's the best hitter on the planet. But if we're judging you on you got to win a tournament, you're going to need more from Aaron Judge. And this was a bad game. Bad game. Amazing top, player.
Top really nine. Bad game. Top nine. Luis Arraez with a leadoff walk. What a thing. Luis Arraez, a man who does not walk particularly often, lays off a fastball that was like a ball, maybe a half a ball off the plate upstairs and away, gets to first base, and in comes Javier Sanoja as a pinch runner. Sanoja, utility man for the Marlins, had been a jumping bean all evening, Mr. Ants in his pants, the king of not being able to sit still. At the end of every inning, he was flying out of the dugout and waving his arms around as he greeted his teammates. He was everywhere. And I said to Andy McCullough at The Athletic, who's sitting next to me, I was like, if this guy gets in this game, I'm a little bit worried. Because it's like, how locked in has he been? Is he ready to play baseball? Or has he just been goofing off as a fan the entire time? He comes in as a pinch runner, and it's like, he's going, right? Dave Roberts style, the stadium knows he's going. And he beats the throw by a horsehair on a slide around a Bryce Terang tag on a play where if Will Smith doesn't bounce the throw and the ball's going down and its trajectory at the end and not bouncing and going up, I think he's probably out. A great shot on the broadcast of Acuna. You can see Acuna screaming at Sanoja to get a bigger lead and to go. At one point, Acuna kind of waves his arms in the air to be like, run! Like, run to second base. Go steal. It was like if, you know, a Little League dad is like, hey, steal sign, run!
Well, it's also funny because Sanoja is faster than Arraez and has some steals, but he's not like a speed demon with like impeccable base running acumen or track record of like, oh, this guy's an automatic stolen base. Like, he's not. He is that compared to Arraez, sure, but it was not like, okay, so great, you just have second base. And so, yeah, so the fact that it was this close was kind of appropriate, and I love that detail about Acuna. I did not notice that at all, but he gets there. He's in scoring position. And here comes Gino Suarez, who we will lavish even more praise on later, but we will keep it short here, facing Garrett Whitlock, 7-pitch at bat, clobbers a changeup. And Whitlock did not look great. This was his third appearance in 5 days. His velocity was down. And Gino double to the gap, and Venezuela goes right back ahead. And if you thought it was loud for the Bryce Harper home run, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It was noisy in there.
This stadium.
It was just noisy.
Unbelievable. It was really something special. Tyler Rogers comes in. Tyler Rogers, again, who won in Team USA? If we're saying USA winners, I think Tyler Rogers counts. He did his job.
David Bednar.
Gets out of the inning. We go David Bednar. Oh, what a beast. He didn't pitch in this game. Bottom of the ninth, here comes Daniel Palencia. If there was any doubt, I'm sure I have no doubt at all. Omar Lopez admitted it. He said, yeah, I woke up this morning with a bunch of texts from teams saying, hey, can you please not use our pitcher? Please don't use
Pretty
him.
Please.
I'm sure one of those was from the Chicago Cubs saying, hey, Daniel Palencia, kind of important to us. Can you not have him go back-to-back throwing 100 miles an hour in the middle of March? Omar Lopez was like, thanks, I'll consider it. Daniel Palencia, who was bouncing around
Sorry.
During USA batting practice.
Who's this?
Palencia is like, oh, wrong number. Sorry about this.
Sorry, wrong number.
You've got the wrong person. Sorry, if you want to text Mark DeRosa and tell him not to use someone, he'll probably listen to you. But in this case, that is not going to be the case because Daniel Palencia is coming into this game. He comes in. He strikes
Automatic.
Out Kyle Schwarber.
Automatic.
Gunnar Henderson pinch hits for Alex Bregman. Finally, he comes in. He hits one of the higher infield pop-ups that I could remember in some time. I thought that might have hit the roof. That was that was absolutely crushed. But
on the broadcast, Joe Davis said, when this finally comes down, Venezuela will be one out away. He had time to say that while it was in the air.
Love that. Love that. Love that. Love that. And then up comes Roman Anthony, who, again, USA Team USA winners. What a showing for this kid. I mean, what a future. What a present. What a swing. What a talent. Roman Anthony. Oh, my goodness. But it was not to be here. In this case, he was Mike Trout, and Daniel Palencia was Shohei Ohtani. And it took just 4 pitches, fastball, splitter, and then 99.7 right by him. Venezuela is the World Baseball Classic champions in 2026. When we return, we will celebrate Venezuela's championship, talk about Team USA finishing runner-up again. But before this break, I do want to remind you that fantasy baseball season is here, folks. Make sure you go draft with your friends or join a public league at Yahoo Sports, Yahoo Fantasy. Sign up in the Yahoo Fantasy app or at yahoofantasy.com/baseball. I've already drafted a few times. Now it is your turn. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
What's up, everybody? Jake Mintz here. Opening day is right around the corner. That also means it's college basketball time. Make sure you beat the buzzer this season. Yahoo Fantasy Bracket Mayhem Brackets are now open for your shot at $50,000. Fill out your men's and women's brackets for a chance to win $25,000 in both tournaments. Visit yahoofantasy.com/bracketmayhem to fill out your brackets now.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Venezuela, champions of the world. I think actually I'm going to propose that verbiage. If we're going to do World Series and say world champs, I think for WBC, Venezuela, they're the champions of the world. I think it's also fair to call them world champions. It is quite literally the world. But I'm going to go with champions of the world.
I liked Joe Davis's call. Venezuela,
yep.
Best in baseball. I thought that was cool. I thought that was simple. I thought that was like all-encompassing. It was like, yeah.
That's what was on the shirts.
This is what this is. This is, and that's what the shirt said. Yeah. So that was really cool. But let's just get into some of the main characters here. We've kind of touched on some of them along the way, but there are certainly some others that I think we want to dig deeper on. And then of course we should zoom out and just like talk about what a moment this is for the not just the players, but the people of this country. But I do want to kind of go one by one here with a few of the players. Let's start with Gino, who was, of course, someone that you wrote about last night. You know, I had the pleasure of watching him have his Mariners moment, you know, in the postseason in ALCS Game 5, that grand slam in very similar circumstances. And you know, in that case, it was the bottom of the eighth instead of the top of the ninth. He works this great at bat. There's no outs. There's this rally. And, you know, that, I mean, I'll certainly never forget the sound from that grand slam, you know, the opposite field one off of Sir Anthony Dominguez. And that whole night after Gino had that moment was really about him. You know, of course, it was the Mariners were a win away from the World Series, but Gino having come back at the trade deadline and just the energy that he brings to any clubhouse, but particularly to one that was already quite familiar with him, I think it was so easy to just celebrate him and appreciate that he was able to have that moment at that point in his career. And to think that he could ever top that is really something special. And to think that he would be able to do it 5 months later like this was all the more awesome.
I'm just going to straight read from what I wrote last night about Gino, if that's all right, because it is how I feel. Suarez is one of the most universally beloved personalities around the game. A kind and effervescent soul who thrives off human connection, the type of person who has never woken up on the wrong side of the bed. Suarez would offer a warm grin and a friendly hello to a rain cloud. It is impossible to imagine him, say, declining to shake an MLB teammate's hand during an international competition. He is, in that way, a wonderful encapsulation of what makes this Venezuela team special: relaxed fearlessness, easy confidence, passion with a smile. That's it. Everyone loves this guy. Like, everyone loves this guy. He is so easy to be around. He is so friendly. He is so warm. And I'm very happy for him that he got to be the hero of the evening.
Oh, it was just, my goodness. And we're going to come back to Gino in a second. But let's keep going around the diamond. Let's go back to the top of the order with Mr. Acuña. I think Ronald, now that, you know, that hit was his only hit in this game to lead off the game. He does draw a walk later. Ronald has a World Series, but as he was not shy in reminding folks afterwards, he did not get to participate because of one of his major injuries that he was, of course, dealing with in 2021. However, this was him. He was a big part of this whole tournament. Of course, it means all the more to him. It you know, representing his country. And so for him to just be out there on the field for that last out and to see the emotion for him for that whole last inning and really this whole knockout round. And then to do it with Michael Garcia, we can just bring him in, which is, of course, what you wrote about after their semifinal win. We haven't even talked since then. But those two guys, and you can kind of touch on both of them. Michael Garcia winning MVP of the tournament. He didn't even have a hit in this one, but of course he has that RBI early on, and he had a terrific tournament overall. He's a budding superstar. Yeah. I mean, he is one of the best players in baseball now, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. That's why he was hitting second on this team. And for those cousins who grew up together and you know, chased this dream alongside each other, wow. What a thing. And I encourage everyone to go read Jake's story after the semifinal against Italy to kind of learn a little bit more about that.
These two are from a town of 3,000 people that has produced 8 big leaguers and like 40 pro players. It's a ridiculous thing. They are cousins. They're not just like, they're cousins. They're hitting 1 and 2 in the lineup. And in the semifinal, they have the game tying and go ahead hits to push Venezuela into the championship game. Michael, you know, so Ronald, obviously a superstar. If you're a ball fan, you know his name. Michael Garcia, because he plays in Kansas City and has kind of had this slow burn to improvement. He did not, you know, burst onto the scene necessarily as a rookie or as a second year player. Gradually getting better, was a, you know, 5.5 win player last year and got MVP votes and signed an extension with the Royals. He is a phenomenal baseball player and someone that I think is really still getting better.
Yeah.
Ice in his veins, super clutch. He's had a reputation of being super clutch in the Venezuelan Winter League. He looked really locked in when the Royals were in the playoffs. I believe he started like that wild card round for Kansas City in the 9 hole. And by the end, he was leading off. Like, he loves these moments. He just hasn't really gotten to do them that much in the States necessarily. So it wasn't really shocking to see him rise to the occasion and win the MVP.
Yeah. And the two other quick things on Garcia. One is I take pronunciation seriously, and this is one that I'm going to have to keep working on, because I think he did clarify it is more of just it's Michael, or, you know, more than a Michael. So we'll work on that as he continues to ascend in the sport. The other thing about him, and this is one where it's like, if we knew Spanish, but I this is something that is, even if you don't totally know Spanish, if you follow this guy on social media, he is posting a lot, and he is talking a lot of smack. And what he, throughout the offseason, I'm not going to go into this. If we ever have our, first of all, oh my God, Daniel Alvarez, what a, excited to have him back on the podcast at some point soon. But just Michael Garcia is a really interesting character in the Venezuelan baseball space because of how vocal he is online. And he probably should just log off sometimes, but apparently he's just hilarious. He does not hold back whatsoever. Three other individuals I want to hit on, and then we'll zoom out for Venezuela. The first is Luis Arraez, who, you know, has that important walk that ends up, you know, being the go-ahead run here. I love that he gets to just be a superstar in this setting. I know his whole offseason was spent just getting told how much he sucks, and he ends up with his one-year deal with the Giants. But this guy is really important to this team, to this country. He's a guy that, of course, ends up holding the flag coming out for some circumstantial reasons that we'll get to, including the next player that we're going to talk about. But I was really happy for him. Awesome moment. Jake and I are like the last people out of Lone Depot last night. We get in our Lyft to go back to the hotel, and our Lyft driver is wearing an Arraez jersey, a proud Venezuelan who, what did he say when we got in the car? What was the exact
line? No tengo voz. No tengo voz. I don't have a voice. We hit him with a felicidad, with a congratulations.
Yeah. Arraez is so cool. So again, am I guaranteeing he's going to have a 5-WAR season and prove all the haters wrong with the Giants? No, but
yes.
I love this guy, and I'm it was really cool to see him have another big tournament. I want to hit on Palencia quickly. A lot of pitchers that deserve a lot of love on this pitching staff for sure, but man, like, I remember watching him pitch in, you know, normally this sentence it's like, oh, I saw him in A-ball. No, this was just a year ago. But a year ago in spring training, first game of spring training, Cubs and Dodgers are getting ready, you know, to go to Tokyo. And he came into that game like blowing 102 in mid-February. And at that point, he had been in the big leagues for a couple of seasons, but his control was so bad. His execution was just not there. His ERA was like 5. But you just watch him. You're like, man, if this guy can just dial it in a little bit. The Cubs had brought in all these veteran, boring relievers. And it's like, once those guys kind of move out of the way and Palencia figures it out, he is going to be a dude. And that is exactly what happened last season. And now here he is, man. Like, he is Team Venezuela's closer. And they have other relievers like Robert Suarez, who didn't show up. And, you know, like, they have some of the other guys. But this is the guy that showed up. This is the guy that wanted the ball as often as he could. He pitches on back-to-back days. He throws 100 miles an hour to get the win. And he's, again, with relievers, you never know how long they're going to be good. He might just go right back to being bad because that's just the nature of the sport. But, oh, it's just so cool to just think about where he's come, even in just a year, to have this moment for him. And then I think the last one we have to finish with on an individual level is Salvador Perez, right? Like, wow, what an important figure in modern Venezuela baseball. What an important... of course, figure in the Kansas City Royals history. And what an awesome note that I didn't really think about that Zach Cram put out there. I don't know if you saw this. I certainly didn't have think about this.
Number of players to have won the World Series and the WBC?
No. This is Salvador Perez specific. Because what did you just mention, right? Salvador Perez won the World Series. However, when the Kansas City Royals won the World Series, Salvador Perez was not behind the plate because he had been pinch run for. And Drew Butera was there for the last out in 2015. So for Sal to be behind the plate to catch this final out for for his country was amazing, was so cool. He was saying afterwards, like, okay, I can retire now. Now, I don't think he's, you know, just going to hang him up and not show up for the Royals this year. But this has to feel like a real finishing touch on just a spectacular career.
Yeah.
And even though everyone will say he should not go in the Hall of Fame because his OBP is low, I look forward to telling those people they are wrong, because I absolutely adore Salvador Perez. Yeah.
One last thought on Venezuela, Jordan, and then I think we'll take a break and then just do Team USA in a sec. The geopolitical context of all of this is so complicated, where I genuinely don't know how the players feel and how a lot of fans feel. Maybe I think a lot of them don't know how they feel. It's a lot of emotion. It is complicated to wrangle. If you live under a news rock, the United States on January 3rd, launched a military operation to capture Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, who had been running that country for some time, a person who is pretty resoundingly despised by Venezuelans that live in America, which obviously was the majority of the crowd the other night or last night. And I think where I kind of, the entire tournament, players and the manager were like, please don't ask us about this. We don't want to talk about this. We want to focus on the baseball. And I think that that is something that I think was generally respected, although I think it maybe Venezuelan reporters went back to it a couple times and there was some frustration from Acuña, I think, after the semifinal. But it didn't really matter. And I guess it also, like, there was this outpouring of emotion where you could tell that all of these people have had a very trying couple of months, a very trying couple of years, of decades even. And I think that that is the, like, the important context to provide about how that folds into it. That being said, I don't think they were waking up on, you know, Tuesday morning and saying, we need to beat Team USA because they invaded our country on January 3rd. Like, I don't think that the fans needed extra motivation to care about this. I don't think the players needed it either. I think it was a little bit simpler than that, perhaps.
Well, yeah. I mean, in simpler terms, it just goes back to how we opened the podcast, which is just think about their baseball history in this tournament, which has just not been as good as you would expect for a country with this amount of talent. And so I think that alone is why it was so satisfying for the players, for Omar Lopez particularly, who has been involved in some of these, you know, defeats in past tournaments. But, you know, you mentioned the political complexities, and of course what happened with Maduro is maybe the headliner, but as we know, this is also something that is impacting Venezuelan, you know, immigrants from Latin America in this country all the time anyway. And that is of course a much heavier topic that goes beyond Venezuela and Venezuelan baseball, but it's also directly related, because
Eugenio Suarez, I apologize.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say, like, I just wanted to bring it back because Eugenio Suarez was just asked about this, you know, recently. I believe this was Gordon Whitmire in the Cincinnati Inquirer asked him about it. And just, of course, what's been happening with ICE and deportations in this country. And Suarez talked about how scared he was and people in his family and how he was essentially scheduled to get citizenship. He was on his way, on the pathway to finally get his American citizenship. And that was canceled because of what has been going on, you know, with the relationship, non-relationship, however the United States is treating Venezuela right now. That has impacted his own life and his and his family and people he knows, his safety. And so it is a direct impact. And yes, you could say, oh, well, these guys are making all this money, they're fine, they're here, whatever. No, I mean, these are real life things that are impacting these people. And so it's more than just what is happening back home. It is impacting a lot of players in these communities. And so I think that is part of it too. And for Gino to have just come out and spoke out about that, I think, you know, speaks all the more that, but, you know, he was the hero, and remind us that it is relevant, no matter, as much as we want to kind of ignore it to a degree. Ignore is not the right word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's also the dynamic where it has impacted Venezuelan baseball. Like, unrest in Venezuela has created an environment where scouts don't really go there as often, where instead of young prospects being seen there, they have to go over the border to Colombia to get scouted. To every baseball team used to have a complex in Venezuela, basically, if not all of them, but like many of them, most of them had complexes in Venezuela. Now there are none. There used to be a Venezuelan summer league that went alongside the Dominican summer league. And now all those players just go to the Dominican. Maybe part of that is cost-saving maneuvers. Sure. It is mostly because MLB is not interested in operating in the country because of the situation down there. And so, like, I think that that is a relevant part of this, where it has hurt the Venezuelan baseball world because it is, look, good players are still going to get seen. Like, that's not being, it's like, here's Ronald Acuna Jr. They found him. Wow. But it is certainly a dynamic at play. Jordan, I think we take a break here and then we do Team USA. Any final thoughts on this?
I mean, this could be another 5-10 minutes, but I just, is there a name that we have to say that we haven't yet? Miguel Cabrera. I mean, this dude played in the first five World Baseball Classics and now gets to be on the coaching staff and finally win here. I mean, to see him in tears was amazing. And Miggy's is his own story, but he's a name that we definitely need to mention when talking about baseball and Venezuela. So I'll make sure we do that. And now we will take a break.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. An American hero, Ricky Bobby, once said, "If you ain't first, you're last." And that iconic phrase very much applies to Team USA in this World Baseball Classic, as the Americans finish with the silver for the second consecutive year. Watching Team USA wait in line to get their silver medals that they immediately took off their necks was something I will never forget. It was very bizarre. None of them were happy, except for Clayton Kershaw. Big smile on his face. Just not because they lost, but because he's, you know, he can go nap now. Jordan, where do you want to start with Team USA discourse?
Well, let's just start with the medal ceremony. So we did not cover the 2023 World Baseball Classic. So as I mentioned, there was some kind of processes that we were not as familiar with. So when this started happening, I was like, did they just introduce this? But no, they did do this in 2023. And I went back and there is video on MLB.com of this exact same thing where Commissioner Rob Manfred is giving silver medals to Team USA. But when you watch that clip, and again, it's edited, but you can look it up. Look up on MLB.com. You watch it. It doesn't have anywhere close to this energy. They had just lost to Japan and Ohtani had his moment and it was like, well, that was really cool, right? And again, Team USA was not a team that was like, this team has to win because of the pitching staff. So they were disappointed. But you could see a moment where they get it. A lot of the guys are kind of smiling and some of them are still in the dugout, kind of just like dapping each other up. And it's like, all right, you know, we're good. That was not what this looked like. And there is no surprise that that is not what this looked like, because this was far more disappointing considering the roster that they had built to essentially be unbeatable, to get back on top of the international baseball world, and then to just have the exact same thing happen, to lose 3-2 in the final and to then be forced to literally wear it minutes afterwards. This is not like the MLB postseason where you get to go inside and cry and drink with your friends for an hour and a half before talking to anybody. You got to go right back out there and get in line and get your silver medal. And as I, you know, kind of wrote about in my story, you know, in international competition in the Olympics, sometimes getting a silver medal is awesome. You know, a lot of times those people are amped to have gotten that. But this was a long, you know, 8 minutes, 9 minutes to the whole roster, procession. including players, pitchers like Jeff Hoffman and Tim Hill, who didn't even pitch. It was a bit, and then the coaches and Derek Skubal, and you're just thinking about like
how, ritual.
Oh, it was tough. But hey, this is how it goes, and they had to deal with that. So why did this happen? Why did this team lose, Jake? Where would you like to begin there?
They lost because they played worse and the offense was bad. Yep. The offense was bad. For all of the conversation and debate about the pitching staff in 2023, Team USA lost the 2023 final by a score of 3-2, right? They lost by a score of 3-2. And last night, they lost by a score of 3-2. One of the greatest lineups ever assembled. Aaron Judge, Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Bobby Witt Jr., Gunnar Henderson when he got in the game. Scored 2 runs, both of which came on one swing, against a group of relievers that rose to the occasion, but I would say besides Palencia are not dominant. The dude who threw the 8th inning last night is on the Oryx Buffaloes, okay? And Team USA and their superstars could not get the job done. I would like to hop into the they cared less discourse, please.
Yes.
If I may.
Go for it.
I think they cared less. I don't think they didn't care. I don't think they didn't care. Okay. I think the Team USA players, this didn't mean something to them. And I think they were invested. I think they were bought in. But I don't think I can imagine a scenario where if Team USA wins, that they're crying. You know?
Yep.
I can't imagine that. Yep, and I don't think, again, the context is important. Cultural differences. It means more to be the underdog when you win, et cetera, et cetera. I just think based upon the decisions that were made with how often these pitchers were being used, I think that it just Venezuela was willing to push the chips in more. Whereas I don't think Mark DeRosa, and we could talk about the legitimacy of this, like was willing to piss off the San Diego Padres by throwing Mason Miller in the 9th inning of this game.
Right. And it really is like that decision and just being like, okay, is he, to me, it's just the silly thing. Is he available or not? Oh, you could, if you're winning, if it kind of encapsulates the whole or so much about this. If it's convenient, if you're winning, you can put him in. That's fine. And the other thing I think about it too, is you just think of the contrast with Omar Lopez. And by the way, like this is not all on DeRosa, but it's just,
I'm going to do a justice for DeRosa rant here.
Yeah. Well, for sure. Cause again, and I think I'm going to get back to the offense in a second, like the amazing players were not amazing. And so that was not good enough, but just, I made the point earlier, but truly you think about Omar Lopez. Okay. Getting bombarded by texts. Oh, can you please don't write? No, these are all choices. These restrictions are not actually real. It is what, once the players are there, if they are on the roster, they are allowed to play. They are allowed to start. If Derek Skubal wanted to start this game or one of the other games, he could have done that, but he decided not to. And that's fine. That's his prerogative, but he chose that. And so Omar Lopez looked at the situation and said, yeah, guess what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to win the first World Baseball Classic in Venezuela baseball history. Mark DeRosa looked at it and he was like, well, you know, I don't want to piss off the Padres. I want to respect Mason Miller's health or whatever. And if he had done that and they had won, Mark DeRosa is not a national hero. It's just like, all right, he figured it out. They won this time. This roster was awesome. Credit to him for putting together this all-time roster. And Team USA won. Congratulations to them. And we move on. Omar Lopez does this. And oh my goodness, right? Like he's the guy that brought this trophy to Venezuela.
To me, dude, it's so much simpler. It's literally just that we see the priorities. The priorities are here and they are laid bare. The priority for Mark DeRosa, why wasn't Mason Miller in the game? I was honoring the Padres. The priority was honoring the desires and the preferences of the big league teams in terms of pitching usage. The priority for Omar Lopez was to win the frickin' tournament. Okay?
Yep.
Now, DeRosa has to answer to all these people. I understand it. But he's not working with a unique set of circumstances that the other countries are not working with, right? Mm-hmm. Either you get to have this bullpen full of incredible pitchers, or you can have Andrés Machado, all due respect, of the Oryx Buffaloes. Like, if you want to go get the Oryx Buffaloes, like, there are a couple American guys over there playing an MPB that you can call upon, you know?
Yeah.
Good.
And that's the other thing about this is whether it's the lineup. Let's turn it back to the players. And we can go back to DeRosa for a second because it's part of this. But Garrett Whitlock's amazing. Griffin Jackson is amazing. You have all these incredible, like, the players and the hitters especially, which we can come back to. At the end of the day, whether the lineup was perfectly optimized or not, whether he didn't use all of his pitchers in the perfect sequence or not, this team was unbelievable, and they did not perform well enough to win this tournament.
Let me hop
they
in here.
They were that good that they almost did anyway, just as was the case in 2023, but it was not good enough, and here they are.
This
silver medalists again.
Was so good. This roster was so amazing. And that is what? A credit to Mark DeRosa, okay?
Yes.
I want to give a little bit of justice to the USA manager here. Did he make mistakes in this tournament? Yes. Did he misspeak and miscalculate? Oh, absolutely. The reason that this roster is so good, and the reason why I do think there's a chance DeRosa manages this team again, is because his most important job is not to press the buttons in the dugout. It is to get all the good, famous, cool, talented baseball players to commit to this thing. And he said this after the game. It was emotional for him to, like, welcome the players after getting the silver medals, because this had been a process that had taken up a lot of time for him over the last year and change, to get Judge to do it, to get Skubal to throw that one start, to have Paul Skenes be all in. That probably took a little bit less. Skenes was super. But, like, Harper and Gunnar, like, all these guys, like, DeRosa did it. He got the best players to participate. If you look at the offense, right, who would you rather have from the American player pool than the players that were on this roster, right? I'm not sure there are really any players where you're like, oh, that guy that's in spring training right now, I think I'd rather have them in the lineup than the guy I have. And that is because DeRosa is a really good recruiter. He's a really good recruiter. He did a good job building this roster. Did he do a good job managing this roster once he was here? Maybe not. Is there an argument that, like, maybe we should have someone with no connections to MLB so that they feel more kind of empowered to push the issue with certain decisions? Maybe. But as far as, like, DeRosa goes, I did leave last night thinking, like, you know what? Boy, he put a heck of a roster together.
And that was the last point on that I just wanted to make sure I reiterated. As it relates to the offensive disappointment, is that when the roster comes out, and because DeRosa admitted after the fact, he's like, yeah, all the position players want to do it. It's not that hard of a sell for those guys. So yeah, Judge didn't do it last time but like putting together an awesome lineup is, I'm less impressed by that because of the talent that you have available, and it's just less of a big deal. But then for those players, for that group to not give enough support to a pitching staff, that was the story. You got these pitchers to come together and throw high leverage in the middle of March. And guess what? They did, and they were awesome. They set a record for most strikeouts by a team in a single WBC. They were barely walking anybody. They were allowing homers. That was a problem along the way. But this pitching staff showed up. Logan Webb, right? He makes multiple starts. This was an incredible pitching staff. All for naught, right? To not have it actually come together, and we're talking about the smallest possible sample. But guess what? Those other awesome lineups that came together, they were putting up boatloads of runs, whether it was DR, whether it was Korea, whether it was, you know, Italy, of course, right? Venezuela in spurts. But this offense just literally got worse and worse with every game. And that was facing better competition, but it was just not. It did not produce, and we are talking about a very small sample over the course of a full season. I'm sure this would be the best offense in baseball, but man, oh man, that is the tragedy, is that you did succeed. You got the pitchers. You talked a big game about this pitching staff, and you were right, and it wasn't good enough for whatever reason, and that is a shame for Mark DeRosa. The last thing I will say about Team USA, and then we will just zoom farther out. conversation that we had earlier this week about zooming even farther out with Team USA, how they have kind of carried themselves, what they have talked about, how they have communicated, what they are representing, all of the things involving the, and DeRosa is a part of this too, right? DeRosa admitting it is my decision that I wanted to bring in Robert O'Neill to talk to the team. We asked people to send emails about their thoughts on our discussion that we were kind of doing our best, you know, wrangling on minimal sleep earlier this week. And we don't have time to read those emails right now. I hope we do at some point. At the very least, I look forward to responding to it sounds ridiculous. I'm not just saying this because a lot of the people that listened agreed with us, but the points that were made in some of these emails, just to shout out some of the names here, Simon, Eric, Timothy, Patrick, Davis, like Joseph, I was so moved and appreciative. People with military backgrounds who communicated just so well about why so much of this presentation has been so disappointing and icky and missing the point, right? It's not even about what is maybe problematic with it, but it was the missed opportunities of what it could be to present baseball and America and loving the sport and loving competition and loving each other and playing to grow the game. And again, you would get bits and pieces of that from DeRosa, from Bryce Harper, from like, you would hear it along the way, but then to always kind of still go back and just have PCA. This kind of like, this is serious. This is combat. This is like that stuff. I think just the emails that we got, it was so, so poignant. And we really, really appreciate that insight. Cause it put much better words to some of the thoughts that we were trying to get at. And so whether we end up reading them on here or not, I just wanted to really express my gratitude for the people who listened and shared that insight.
I'm good. I'm done. I think the rest of this is pretty straightforward. This tournament is a success. It kicks ass. Should it be in the middle of the season? I think no. I like it where it is. Would it be better if pitchers could throw earnings? Yes. I think if you move it to the middle of the season and you pause the season, what about all the other players that are in the middle of their season that have to like maintain their workloads? That's very difficult and complicated. I think injuries would make things harder because if you get hurt in March, then you have more time. Whereas if you get hurt in July, like maybe your season's over. I think it's good where it is. There's no perfect place to do it. I'm excited for the Olympics in 2028. That'll be a test run for like the middle of the season. I don't think we do it. We still don't know when the next WBC will be. My guess is 2030 because they'll do the Olympics in 28 as kind of like an in-between and they'll just do every 4 years. But yeah, those are my big picture thoughts and I would like to go take a nap now.
Yeah. That's, I guess that's the other thing is this is really cool for us to have gotten to cover this for the first time. And again, any distraction from spring training, which we are not huge fans of is appreciated. Opening day is in 1 week, which is really something, or at least opening night is in 1 week with the Yankees and Giants. But it's really strange because talking about how small of a sample is, it's really not that many games, but it's 20 teams in a tournament. And I really do feel like I have been thinking about this nonstop for months, you know, maybe not as long and as often as you know, Sean Spradling, but this has consumed me. This has captivated me, this tournament. And I am kind of grateful that we are almost to opening day. We start thinking about real baseball and the totality of the season and all these other teams and all these other players. But man, what a tournament this was. What a finale it was. What an ending. What a champion. I think it was a satisfying finish in many, many, many regards. We will leave it there. Thank you to Andrew Hartz, Ingrid Rosas for producing. As always, keep those emails coming. We really appreciate it. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. Thank you, Jake, for working with me here in Miami this week. This was a lot of fun to collab IRL, write some words, do some podcasts. Thank you to anyone who listens to the pod that said hello in Miami. We appreciate it. We'll be back on Friday. We got to preview this Major League Baseball season, allegedly. So I'm going to go catch up on who's on those teams. And until then, congratulations, Venezuela. We will talk to you all on Friday.